Hi, my name is Mark Riggins, and I'm the senior pastor here at LifePoint Church. Thank you for joining us today. If you'd like a little more information about our church, check out lpchurch.us. I hope today's message is an encouragement to you.
Good to see all of y'all here today. Hey, I want to ask you to do me a favor right out of the gate. You're going to think this is a little bit odd, but play along if you would. Would you take out your cell phone with me? I'm not going to ask you to put it on silence. That's not what I'm wanting to do. But if you would take it out, I know some of you are thinking, nah, I don't want to bother. Please bother. I want to ask everybody to participate. I want you to take your cell phone out, and I want you to hold it in your hand with me. We're going to do something together here in a minute. Just take your cell phone out. Yeah, there you go. Some of you are participating. Some of you are like, I don't think he's serious. No, I'm serious. Take your cell phone out. Put it in your hand and just hold it for a second. Look at that beautiful device. Isn't that great? Just kind of stare at it. Whatever your screensaver is, isn't that wonderful? Just look at it and kind of you can look down the aisle, see who the people are who don't have Apple phones, who cause all your text groups to be in the green. That's all right. We're not bitter. And so take out your phone. Yeah, just hold on to it for a second. Yep, somebody just texted me. Thank you. It's now's not the time. But if you take out your phone and just kind of hang on to it for a second, we're going to do something together. Here's what I want. I want you to think about some stats, though. Yeah, go ahead and grab your phone. Did you know that we are the most distracted society in human history? What did you say? That we are distracted on average every 3 minutes. And according to UC Irvine, it takes us 15 minutes to get back on track of what we were doing when we got distracted. Now, I'm not real good with math, but it doesn't sound like a whole lot of productivity is happening. If I'm getting distracted every 3 minutes and it takes 15 to get back on, like... And did you know that we touch these, swipe these, tap these 3,000 times a day? And that there are 1.6 million auto accidents every year because people are distracted by their phones. This causes a lot of distraction, though it's not the only distraction. And now I want to ask you, over the last minute and a half, how many of you would be honest enough to say, you've taken a peek at a couple of apps, you've looked at Instagram, or you've sent a text? If that's you, would you just raise your hand and be honest? Yeah, several of you. I love it. I love your honesty. Thank you for your honesty. Now, here's what we're not actually going to do anything with our phones. I just wanted to see how distracting they really were. And now I want to say what I always want to say in church but never do. People, put your phones up, all right? Now they're close enough to you, when and if it rings in the middle of a service, you're going to have access to it because now you know where it is. You don't have to go digging for it. You just can find it right away. But did you know we are increasingly distracted as a society? One of the questions we ask the most is, what was I doing again? Have you ever been halfway through a prayer when you realize that you forgot that you were praying? It's not just me. I sometimes wonder if God's like, okay, I'll be here when you get back. The truth is, and we're going to talk about this today, distraction's a really big thing, and the thing I'd get distracted by, it's rarely as important as the thing I'd get distracted from. The thing I'd get distracted by is rarely as important as the thing I'd get distracted from. We all struggle with distractions, and we struggle with them more than ever, and it's much more than just a phone, and we're going to talk about that today, and we're going to talk about why that's such a big deal and why we should be paying attention to this. We're in the middle of a series, as Isaac said, called Unfinished, You're Not Finished Yet, or There's You Were Made for More. The reality is, the question that we ask each other the most, that we ask ourselves the most, and that everybody in this room is constantly coming up against, is the question we started with, and it is this: how can I become a better version of myself? We're all asking that. How can I be smarter? How can I be more successful? How can I be slimmer? How can I be stronger? And there isn't anything wrong with that, but what we're contending is that you were made for more than just improving yourself. The truth is, you become a better person when you make the world a better place. But how do I make the world a better place? Well, we introduced a bigger, we think better question, and that is when you begin to ask yourself, what breaks my heart? What breaks your heart? What is it that causes you to get emotional? When you think about it, you're like, there's a thing I must do. Somebody's got to do something about this. Something's got to be done about this situation. Somebody's got to help these people in need. I see a need, and I just can't stop thinking about it. It breaks your heart. It moves you. The problem is, when you finally figure out what that thing is for this next season of your life, here's what I guarantee will happen. You'll get distracted. by something that might even be good, that'll pull you away from the thing that breaks your heart. And the problem with that is, the things I get distracted by are rarely as important as what I get distracted from. And that's why we've got to talk about this today. Because if we're going to talk about what breaks our heart, we've got to put it in context in the culture in which we live, and that is that we are increasingly distracted. And therefore, even if we figure out what breaks our heart, we're likely to get distracted from it. It's a struggle we all have. Here's a guarantee I have for you. If you'll figure out the thing you're supposed to do, the thing you must do, the thing that's really important to you, I guarantee you this will happen. You will be tempted to be distracted from it. And it isn't so nuanced as if you'll be distracted by something bad. You'll actually, it's not like good versus bad all the time. You'll actually be distracted by things that are good, that will distract you from the thing that breaks your heart, the thing that you must do, the thing that you have to do. It's more nuanced. These are the distractions that come our way. In a world of distraction, here's our opening question. How do you keep from settling for what's good at the expense of what's great? In other words, if you discover the thing you must do, how do you keep from settling for the thing you just could do and miss the unique calling that God has given you for your life, the thing you must do? Now listen, if you're a Jesus follower or not, this is important for you to wrestle with. It can make your life better if you can figure out the thing that you must do in life and then figure out what distracts you from that thing that you must do. Whether you follow Jesus or not, this is a really important question. And I've wrestled with this throughout my life in different seasons of my life, but I remember one of the first times was I was trying to figure out what I was going to do when I grow up. And I was a teenager and I remember thinking, man, I wanted to be a pastor, which is an odd thing for a teenager to want to be. But I did, and then I also wanted to be an attorney, which is an odd counterpoint to being a pastor. And so I was debating, am I going to go to law school or am I going to go to seminary? And I went into the Air Force because I really needed money and I wanted to buy some time to make this decision. And I got to be a paralegal working with great attorneys, and I'm still wrestling with this question. And the truth is, both are good options. And I'll never forget the moment when I was sitting back here in church, and Mark and Alicia, I was sitting about where you guys are sitting now. And I'll never forget, it was in that moment where I'm wrestling internally and the pastor was talking and I was probably checked out thinking about something else like some of you might be right now. And all of a sudden, in the quietness of that moment, all of a sudden, something captured my heart. And I remember it breaking because I remember, oh my goodness, I can't not be a pastor. I think that's what God for sure wants me to be. And over the next weeks and eventually months, something changed in me from I could be a pastor to I must be a pastor. And something changed in me over those months and years ahead where it went from I could be an attorney, and now it's that would be a distraction from the thing I must be. I recognized both the thing that I must do and the thing that was most likely to distract me. And I think as I've gone through different seasons of my life, I see this come up. It's not good versus bad. It's often good versus great. It's a thing that I must do, and other things that might not be the ultimate thing will distract me from what I must do, what would be a great thing for me. And so if you're in that place today, maybe you've figured out the great thing that you're supposed to be doing in this season of life. And we're going to help you as we talk through today's message and through this series. Here's what I want to tell you. I want to give you one statement that if you'll hold on to this one statement, it will help you stay focused when the inevitable distractions come your way. Even the good things that you could do but you shouldn't do if you're going to do the great thing that you must do. One statement that I think will help you, and it's found in this story that we're looking at. As we're going through this series, we're going through the story of Nehemiah. You may remember Nehemiah was this Old Testament story 2,600 years ago. There was this Jewish exile, and a bunch of Jewish people were taken to another empire altogether, and they were held captive. And we fast forward the clock to around 444 BC, and around that time, we pick up the story of this one character whose life we're studying, the man Nehemiah. And he was just an ordinary guy. He didn't do anything terribly extraordinary. And he worked for the king of the Persian Empire, King Artaxerxes, the most powerful man on the planet, and he was the cupbearer. And something happened in King Artaxerxes' life. He's just kind of going through life like us, living a kind of ordinary life. And all of a sudden, he got word of something that happened back in his homeland in Israel. And he found out, we saw it in Nehemiah chapter 1, verse 3. He learned that the wall of Jerusalem was broken. That the self-defense was no longer strong and holding the enemy at bay, and that his people and his homeland was in danger. And the scripture says that his heart broke, that he began to pray, he began to fast, he began to cry, he began to mourn. He couldn't get over it. It became the thing he must do something about. But there wasn't anything immediate he could do. So we saw last week that when we're in that place that it feels impossible to move forward, the best thing we can do is pray and plan and expect God to answer the prayers. And that's all Nehemiah has been doing. And he finally got his moment where he went before the king, and that's where we fast forward the story today, where the king says, okay, all the things you've asked for, you get them. Now what are you going to do? And I love this. In verse 9, Nehemiah says, so I went. It's game time. He's ready to finally do the thing that he must do. And in the process of doing the thing that he must do, he's going to teach us one statement that will help us stay on track. So off he goes. It's an incredible story. As Nehemiah heads out, he goes over 1,100 miles around the desert, all the way back from Susa in the Persian Empire, all the way back to Jerusalem. And he starts to scout out the wall to kind of figure out the condition of it, realizes it's in pretty bad repair. And so he gathers the people together because he has a title. He's been given the new governor. And he gathers them together and assigns them the work and says, here's how we're going to do this project. Well, here's the thing. That's good news for everybody, except for a handful of people. It's not good news. See, that was good news for the Israelites. It was good news for the people back in Persia who are funding it. But there are people in surrounding regions this is bad news for, because they see this, a walled city, as a military threat. And so all of a sudden, these enemies start popping up who are both criticizing and distracting Nehemiah, or trying to do that. And that's where we pick up the story today. Nehemiah is busy back in Jerusalem, finally doing the thing that broke his heart that he must do, when all of a sudden, out of nowhere, people begin to try and distract him. And maybe you can relate. Pick it up in chapter 6 of Nehemiah. We pick the story back up. Chapters 4 and 5 are all the beginnings of the distraction. Then chapter 6, it really ramps up. And it says in verse 1, that when word came to Sanballat, Tobiah, Geshem the Arab, and the rest of our enemies. Isn't this fascinating that Nehemiah is doing a good thing, but he has enemies? Isn't it easy to think that when you have enemies that you've done something wrong? But a lot of times, you don't have enemies because you're doing something wrong. Sometimes you'll have critics and distractors because you're doing something significant. And this is the case with Nehemiah. His enemies start popping up all around him. And then look at the rest of that verse. He kind of flexes it a little bit on the quality of work. He's a typical man. He says, I had rebuilt the wall and there wasn't a gap left in it. He's walking around saying, see it? Looks pretty good, doesn't it? Pretty impressive. You ever seen a wall like this one? He's really proud of it, but there's one problem, he says, though up to that time I had not set the doors and the gates. So even though he's proud of the construction quality, they are still very vulnerable. People can kind of come and go. So there's a bit of a problem. He needs to complete the task. Meanwhile, here come the enemies. Verse 2, Sanballat and Geshem sent me this message. And you would think, oh, it must be from the enemies. It must be a bad message. No, it's not a bad message at all. On appearance, it looks like a good message. They said, come, let us meet together in one of the villages on the plain of Ono. And by the way, if anybody invites you to Ono, you should say what? Oh, no. Yeah, I mean, like, that's pretty, seems kind of obvious, right? You guys are smart. It's like we had practiced that or something. That was pretty good. So they invite him out. It seems pretty innocent. It's kind of like, hey, just come meet us for coffee. Let's have lunch. Let's have a chat. It seems like a neighborly thing to do. We just want to meet together. But he knows there's more to the meeting than the meeting. Look what he says in the rest of that verse. He said, no. They were scheming to harm me. In other words, he's working up on the wall. They're down there inviting them to a meeting. And what he knew was they were trying to get him away from his people into a place of isolation where he would be more vulnerable, and they were going to eventually try and harm him. He knew what was going on, and he knew being isolated was dangerous in this case. By the way, it's one of the reasons we love small groups around here, is we recognize that when you are isolated, when you are away from God's people in living your life, that you are more vulnerable and it is more dangerous for you. It's one of the reasons this weekend you see a lot of people wearing these groups shirt. is we believe in groups so much here that we want everybody in one because you find community, you find belonging, you find care. It's a place where we are healthier when we are in community than when we are isolated. And by the way, if you want to get more information today, there's a table out in the lobby you can stop by. You could even sign up for one or just talk with one of the people wearing one of these shirts and ask them, so what's the deal? Give me more information. And these are some of the people who lead some of the groups. We'd love to help you because we believe life is better together, and we believe community groups is a real important place to get in one of these life groups. So back to Nehemiah. Nehemiah knows, hey, this is a trap. I'm never supposed to be isolated. Nothing good's going to come from that. So watch what he did instead. He said, they were scheming to harm me, so I sent messengers to them with this reply. It's as if Nehemiah decides the next thing he's going to say, just give you a little heads up, it's the one statement that I keep saying I think can change everything for you is this next statement. He shouts down from the top of the wall, looking at these messengers and says, hey, I want you to send word back to Sanballat, back to Tobiah, and back to Geshem. I want you to tell them this one statement, and it'll explain why I refuse to come down. It refuses why I will stay up here, and here it is. He said, oh, I am carrying on a, say that word with me, great project and cannot go down. Say that whole thing with me. Say it together. I am carrying on a great project and cannot go down. That might be a good thing you're inviting me to, but it isn't a great thing. I'm doing a great thing and I cannot go down to what you're doing when I am doing something that is great. I know for sure this is the thing that broke my heart that God has divinely assigned me to do, and I will not be distracted by what you're offering for me to do. In fact, I love the next question he asked. Why should the work stop while I leave it and go down to you? It's a literal down in this case, top of the wall, down to these and go out into the plain of Ono. He's like, why would I even do that? Why would it make any sense? Why would I lower myself to do something less important? I am not saying that isn't important, but it is less important than the thing that I am on, the thing that I am doing. I am carrying on a great project, and I cannot go down. Why would I lower myself to do something less than? And so their response to me is fascinating. Look at verse 4. It says, verse 4 says, four times they sent me the same message. In other words, they didn't give up. They were relentless. They continued to try and distract him. You would think his answer would have revealed, oh, well, he's not coming down. We ought to move on to something else. But they were like, no, let's try it again. Maybe he misunderstood us. Maybe he'll weaken. Because in the past, people tried to rebuild the wall, and we would oppose them, and they would give up. This Nehemiah guy seems a little bit different, so let's kind of keep after him. Let's continue to be persistent, and maybe he will eventually give in and cave. And here's the thing about distractions. They are persistent. They keep coming your way no matter what. By the way, I read just this morning, actually. I'm going to share it with you. Here are eight of the most common distractions at church. Curious? Well, you're going to hear them anyway. All right, so here's one. Most common distraction at church, cell phones ringing. But you guys already silenced yours, so we're good. Here's one I thought was a little odd, a little gross, but I'm going to share it. Coughing or clearing sinuses. The third one was PDA, public display of affection. I don't know what's going on at some of these churches, but that would be distracting. Number four was overly loud singers. By the way, if you ever stand near Isaac or I, that will become your distraction. Here's the fifth one, which I've personally never seen, but it's odd. Clipping fingernails. Did anybody have a neighbor clipping their... Well, it just seems odd. Here's one that I can totally relate to, and some of you can too. Typos on the screen. All right, no judgment there. You people calm down. How about this one? Number 7, fashion faux pas by church attenders. Some of us wouldn't know a fashion faux pas, so we don't get distracted by that. Here's one, this is the final one, which kind of bothered me, but it was on the list, so I wanted to read it, and it said, the pastor's outfit. Well, that hit a little close to home. The truth is, persistent distractions are a reality in your life and mine. They are not going away. No matter what we do, You are going to be, you may have checked your phone since I asked you to put them up. That's how persistent these distractions are. It doesn't matter. And what's fascinating is these four times, they kept sending people back and going back and saying, hey, but wait a minute. Why don't you come out and meet us out here? Just meet together out here in this village. Just meet. And he's like, no. He kept giving the same answer over and over. And he's like, well, no. I think you misunderstood us. If today's not a good day, can we meet next week? Can we meet next month? Maybe in a few months, we just need to get on your calendar. And he's like, no, you don't understand. This isn't a scheduling conflict. This is a priority conflict. You won't get on my calendar. I am focused on the thing I must do. This isn't about whether or not I have time. This is whether or not this is a priority. And this is my priority. I love his single-mindedness. He is so hyper-focused. But look at the next part of verse 4. They sent the message, the same message, and each time I gave them the same answer. You know what his answer was each time? I am carrying on a great project and cannot go down. Say it with me. I am carrying on a great project and I cannot go down. I love that. He was relentless. He was not going to change. He was not going to be distracted. He was not going to be swayed. No matter what Sanballat's invitation appeared to be good, he refused to be swayed. And I just want to, some of us right now, we have many opportunities coming at us. And until we know the thing that breaks our heart that we must do, all of them will look equally good. But once our heart has been broken and we know what we must do, all of a sudden we can reset our priorities based on the thing that breaks our heart. I remember when Ginger and I were married. We've been married about 5 years. In 2001, we had our first child, Reagan. And at that time, Ginger had a good career as a nurse. She had her master's degree. She was good at what she did. She was enjoying what she was doing. But she decided to change some of the priorities. And because of Reagan being born, she decided to stay home and with our kids during that season. And that meant that she was going to work some part-time jobs, and we were going to downsize to one really old used car, and we were going to go, instead of, you know, vacations, we were going to have staycations, and we weren't going to have much financial margin. But what we realized was our priorities had shifted, and it wasn't a matter of good and bad, it was just a matter of great and good. And for us, we were reassessing our priorities. And that meant for us that we had to say no to some good things so we could say yes to some great things. And can I tell you, all these years later, we don't regret that decision. And I think there's a list that all of us can create in every season of our life that is a no for now, but not forever. No for now, but not forever list. In other words, Ginger's back to her career's full swing again, but there was a no for now, not forever on her career in that season. And I think in all of our seasons of life, there is a no for now, but not forever thing that needs to go on the list. It might be a hobby. It might be some relational opportunity that's out there. But you're like, you know what? In this season, I need to pause that because I have a priority list, and the thing that breaks my heart must stay at the top of the list. There are many good opportunities that are going to come your way, and it's not a good versus bad. It's a good versus great. I think some of you who are students, there ought to be some things on your no for now, but not forever list. I may pick these things back up. If you're a newlywed or if you're a young parent, there's some things that can be on your no for now, but not forever list. By the way, speaking of newlyweds, I will embarrass. Back here is Rachel and Hunter. Can we welcome them? I wouldn't ask you to raise your hand or anything. That would be embarrassing. But would you just stand for a second so everybody can see you? They got married last Sunday. They've been on their honeymoon. They came back yesterday, and here they are today. So, thank you guys. I just wanted to recognize you. So all we're saying is we don't have like any rule around here. Please don't think that we do, but please don't skip Sundays on your honeymoon. Please make sure you're back in time for church. I was surprised to see them this morning, but really cool. So the reality is all of us have a no for now, but not for forever list, and recognizing what should be on it in this season of your life. Why? Because you're doing something too important. It's too great of a cause. It's too great of a project. See, if you're a parent, when you tuck your kids in at night and you put them to bed, you ought to say, whatever is coming into your life, you continue to say, I am doing a great project and I cannot go down. This is my great project. I will not let anything become a priority over that. Husbands, the reality is this is for us. When you're traveling, you look at your family photo and you say, I am doing a great project and cannot go down. Nothing will change for me. Wives, when you think whatever you're thinking, you look around, you look at your husband, you say, he's a piece of work, right? It's important. It's biblical, right? It's a great project we're all on, this marriage thing, right? Hey, if you're single and you're here, I want you to know that it will be tempting to trade the ultimate for the immediate, but you have a picture of your desired future. Would you stay focused on that? Because you are carrying on a great project and you cannot come down. Staying focused on what God has called you to do. This isn't good versus bad. This is great versus good. And when you know what it is that you ultimately want, you stay laser focused on it and don't let the good distractions pull you away from the ultimate thing that God is leading you to do. Why do I say all that? Because I believe there's a great project in you. I really believe there's a great project in you because you've been designed by God. You've been redeemed by God. He has purposed you to accomplish something in this season of your life that is significant. And that means that right now you are writing the story of your life and you get one opportunity to write this story and write the kind of story that is worth telling. Nehemiah wanted to do the thing that had broken his heart. And so he was so laser focused on it that as he continued, he had these enemies relentlessly. And guess what? After those four attempts at distracting Nehemiah, Sanballat and the other enemies weren't done. It turns out, as you fast forward the story, they kept coming back, and eventually they knew they couldn't distract him by inviting him to some meeting. So they begin to spread some rumors, and they begin to say, oh, I think Nehemiah, you might not know this, but he's actually pretty arrogant, and he's trying to become the king. He's trying to be a king over Israel. Their hope was that the people would rebel, or the rumor would get back to King Artaxerxes in Persia, and he would take him off the project. Do you know what Nehemiah's response to all these rumors and attacks were? Single-minded, relentlessly focused on the thing that he knew he was supposed to do. And what that allowed him to do was not only complete the task, but he completed it with incredible efficiency. I want you to see this in verse 15. As he completes one of the greatest tasks, look at verse 15. It gives the record of his efficiency. It says, so the wall was completed on the 25th day of Elul in, say that with me, 52 days. 52 days. What? You're talking about efficient. Did you know in the last 50 years, the archaeologists have actually unearthed a large portion of this wall that is still in existence 2,500 years later? What are you doing today that will last 2,500 years from now, right? And he completed it in 52 days. So I remember when I read that this week, I thought, well, we're, you know, about to have a new campus built and completed in just under a year. It's pretty efficient. But 52 days is better. So I emailed our general contractor and our project manager. I am not kidding. And I sent them this verse. And I said, look, we don't need it to last 2,500 years. You know, thousands plenty. But I would be more than willing to call you Nehemiah if you could get it done in 52 days. And I'm not kidding. You know what their response was? Yeah, oh no, yeah. Their response was, we live in a capitalist society. Their response was, wow, Nehemiah must have had some really powerful incentives in his contract. So we're looking for a new contractor, if you know anybody. No, not really. The truth is, they not only made a long-term impact, they made it an immediate impact. If you look at verse 16, look what it says. In verse 16, they completed the wall, and watch how it impacted the people around them. When all our enemies heard about this, all the surrounding nations were afraid and lost their confidence. Why were they afraid and lost their confidence? Because they realized that this work had been done with the help of our God. In other words, we've been opposing God, it dawns on them, because they couldn't have gotten, look, I see Nehemiah, there's nothing special about him. They said, he's very ordinary. These people seem ordinary. There's no lightning event that's happened. They've just stayed so single-minded. What I just want to say is, when ordinary people have their heart broken for an extraordinary cause, and they refuse to be swayed by distractions, God does extraordinary things. And He will get the credit. And He will get the glory. And you may think, well, what about Jesus? In His life, was He ever distracted? I mean, think about it. We don't have to wonder what broke Jesus' heart. He made that super clear. You remember, it was Jesus who said, I have come to seek and save the lost. And in case we were still a little confused, He said, I will leave the 99 and go after the one that is lost. In case that wasn't clear enough, He also said, and I am not here to redeem the righteous, but the unrighteous. I have not come for the healthy, but for the sick. He repeatedly said this over and over. I have come to seek and to save the lost. He made it really clear what His goal line was. But right before He began His ministry, right after He's baptized and the ministry is about to begin, He went out into a desert. And when He went out there to pray and to prepare for ministry, all of a sudden the enemy came and tried to distract Him, not once, not twice, but three different persistent times. Tried to do good things like, hey, here's some authority, here's some power, here's some fame, here's some food. But Jesus was so laser focused on why He came, He was thinking about you. He was thinking about me. We are His great project. And it says in Hebrews chapter 12 that He had His eyes so fixed that for the joy that was set before Him that He wanted to endure shame to go to the cross. And the joy is actually in the original language, it's an article before the word joy. It's not like a broad joy. He was just finding it joyful. But there was the joy. In other words, there was a finish line that He was focused on. This is the gospel story. That Jesus came so laser focused knowing why He came that every time distractions came, He focused on the great purpose of His coming to earth. And His great purpose of coming to earth was you. And me, it was us. He came because He knew that we were going to be people who would be in need of a Savior, who would be sinners who couldn't pay the price of our sin. But He came to demonstrate His love on a cross. And He was so focused on this and on His mission that He continued all the way to the end. And then 3 days later, He rose from the dead, declaring life over death and revealing to me and to you that there is hope in this world and that we don't have to be distracted, that we can stay focused because of who He is. He's giving us purpose. He's giving us life. And He pours it into me and you. And He invites you and I to now jump into the game and be part of His great story. But our enemy continues to distract. And there's so much at stake. God knew that we were at stake in the gospel. But in the same way, whatever God has put in your heart, there are other people depending on you to stay focused on that until the end. There's too much at stake for us to be distracted by other things, by lesser things. We must stay focused because whatever we are distracted by is going to be far less important than the thing that we are distracted from. Jesus endured the cross because you are that important. I just want to know, if you've never given your life to Jesus, it's why He came. He loves you so much. And at the end of the service, we're going to have people here at the front who would be willing to pray with you. And we just invite you to the front in here in a little bit. As people are leaving, you can just quietly come up and we would love to pray with you, talk about what it looks like to give your life to this great Jesus. It's why He came to earth to begin with. In a world of distractions, let me just ask you, friends, in a world of distractions, how do you keep from settling for what's good at the expense of what's great? It's simply this: to remember that the things I get distracted by are rarely as important as the things I get distracted from. Let's keep building, church. We're doing something together as a church that I think is so important and significant, and there are going to be people who try to distract us, but let's stay laser focused. We're single-minded because we know it's too important what God has called us to do. We are focused on it. But let me ask you personally, what's your wall? What's the thing that God has invited you to do that He's put on your heart, just like He did Nehemiah? What's the thing that breaks your heart, the one thing you must complete? And maybe it's this year, or maybe it's in this season of life, you say, well, there's a habit I need to break, there's a business I need to start, there's a relationship I need to rebuild, there's a debt I need to pay off, there's a degree I need to finish, there's something going on that I must do. And then let me ask you, if you're looking at the other needs in the community or even within your family, what will be the distractions that will keep you from doing that? What are the obstacles that you need to remove? And then let me ask you, what do you need to eliminate? What are the things that you would say, well, no for now, but not forever. I just need to put this on pause and I can bring it back into my life later. And then lastly, who do you need to eliminate? And not literally. but someone that might need to come off of your schedule for a while. The problem is, there may not be a good influence on you and who you need to become. And the odds are, you're not a great influence on them and who they need to become. And as you are thinking of them right now, if they're in the room, they're probably thinking of you, right? So it works out. But who is it that you need to push pause so that you can become who you need to be and do what God has called you to do? We need to embrace this mantra. When we discover what it is that we know God is leading us to do, I am carrying on a great project and cannot go down. Say it with me. I am carrying on a great project and cannot go down. Somebody's depending on you to follow through on that. Somebody's depending on you to be the one who sees it through to the end. There are a lot of things you can do, but there is something you must do. Find out what that is, because you are doing a great project and you cannot come down. LifePoint, we are doing a great project, so don't come down. Let's pray. God, I thank you so much for this story that reminds us that you use ordinary people like us to do extraordinary things when we stay laser focused on the thing you've invited us to participate in. You tend to get the glory for it all. And God, that's our desire in this story of our church, is we want you to get the credit for it. We know what you're doing and that you're going before us. I also recognize there are a lot of people with things in their life and in their own heart that you're inviting them to. And God, there's so much there's so much that convinces us that you're moving. There's so much that convinces us that you're going ahead of us. There's so much that convinces us that we see your fingerprints all over it. God, help us to be confident. Help us to step into this season knowing that we are doing a great project and we cannot come down. May you and you alone get the glory for it all, I pray. In Jesus' name. Amen.